Good morning, Little Saigon, Seattle. This is Dan. And yeah, it's May the 27th, 2019, Memorial Day. I'm just here drinking my coffee. Got the day off. I've already opined on Memorial Day. I don't think you need to hear another podcast that deals with that subject. The only thing I would say is if you're going to the cemetery today to pay your respects to a loved one, I wish you well. Do well with your trauma. I wish you peace. And pray for peace. Anywho, sticking with my most recent podcast strategy, I am going to try to work these lists backwards because I feel like the most recent ideas are the freshest, which is probably true. And therefore, why not go with the freshest idea in my head? So, I have been... how can I say this? Crap, I don't even know how to say this. I have been wrestling with this fucking cap on the pen here. No, I have been wrestling with this question of normality for about a week now, because in very marginal ways, things are getting more normal than they were a while back. A while back, I was really thinking I was going to end up in the streets. And I'm not really saying that that's great or not great. I'm not going to judge that. I think you know my views on homelessness. I know that we've always had poor people, and we will probably always have poor people. And I have been poor myself. And, you know, homelessness is just the next level down. And, I really don't know what to say. I wish we would treat homelessness like a symptom and not as a disease, but we just don't know what to do. It's kind of our mentality. Anyways, I have been wrestling with this question of whether things are getting more normal, and then wrestling with the question of what do I think the future looks like for me. And it's been kind of tough. I can't lie to you. It's one of those questions of like, do I really want to open the door to normality and pretend? Here's the thing. I know it's pretend land. I know that going there is pretend land. But the thing that comes up, and this is the issue, because, okay, I am an adult male. I am not dead yet. I am attracted to women. So the question that comes up is, do I want to totally give up on romance? Because I'm almost there. I haven't had a girlfriend since my ex dumped me. I really don't know where I would go to kind of make that happen. I'm not into the whole going to clubs. I never was. I never will be. I know there are people who would say, well, you'll find a girl at church. Well, I don't go to church to pick up women. I know that may sound radical and kind of upside down. But I don't go to church. I don't join in the congregation to pick up women. I join in the congregation to worship God. And yeah, I'm glad to be a member of a congregation. I'm glad to, you know, to have a fellowship in Christ. I think that's a good thing. But I don't go to church thinking, oh, how do I pick up? Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I sometimes see women at church and I don't know if they're married or not. And I say, well, that's an attractive woman. But I don't, you know, that's about it. Church is not about that. Church is not supposed to be about picking up women. Anyways. So that question comes to mind. Do I really give up on romance altogether? Do I give up on women? And before you go off on some, well, Dan, you just hate women. I don't actually hate women. I don't. I just kind of hate the bullshit. You know, it's one of those things where... Well, I don't know. Let me back up a little bit. I'm helping out at church doing this technical support stuff. It's really very basic. It's kind of ridiculous. I basically do the lighting. So there's a lighting script, and at certain points during, during the service, I'm supposed to turn on certain lights and not others, blah, blah, blah. It sounds, it's not that, it's really basic, it's kind of trivial, but it is, I can see that it's a necessity. So I volunteer to help. I you know, pushed a little arrow that turns on lights at a certain point in the script. I suppose you could say it's like doing lighting in the theater, except for it's at church. And so I do that. I volunteer to do that. And a gentleman that works with me there is a little bit on the touchy side, which means he likes to touch people's shoulders and arms. And I get that. Some people are like that. I've come to accept that. I will say, I'm not a huge fan of it, but at church, I can deal with it because at church, you know, you're there for Christ, and Christ was touchy-feely, was he not? I have to admit that to myself. He was not an aardvark or a frickin', you know, porcupine. So yeah, my inclination is not towards being that way, and I kind of felt like I got suckered. Like, if you ask me, it is true, human contact is really great, but I feel like that's how I got suckered the first time around in terms of love. It's like all that human contact, all the hugging and the kissing, and yeah, the having sex, but in many ways, just the human contact in general, it suckers you in. It pulls you in, and it's one of those things where I'm a little bit on edge. So this guy, you know, who does the technical support, he's a toucher. He's not a bad guy. I just think he's one of those people that feels entitled to touch your shoulder if he wants to. And I kind of recoiled at it. I really didn't like it, but I don't know if it was obvious. It was just, you know, after the situation at that contract at that fucking local airline, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about people touching me, because here's the thing. I get why people want to touch other people. I understand that. But it seems like there are circumstances where you should be a little bit fucking reticent. I would say the workplace is a good example. Anyways, how does that connect to love and romance? Well, here's the deal. I am kind of, I'm recoiled by the whole thing. I'm recoiled by it. It pushes me away. I am horrified by this idea that I would get into another relationship where a person would invest all this fucking energy in thinking that they might change me into somebody else and then be really disappointed 10 years later when they found out they can't. I don't really want that. And the thing is, I know I fucked up the last time around, too. I went in, Sergeant Rogers was so right. He said, Dan, you're going to marry the first person you have sex with, and that's exactly what happened. But anyways, yeah, I fucked up, too. I should have realized that, you know, a first love is a first love, and first loves are often meant to go away and to end, and I fucked up. I would say that my ex fucked up too, but I'm not going to put that on her. But no, I'm not too keen in getting into a relationship again and playing the dance of, well, what am I willing to give up about myself? I used to think it was that simple. Like, there are things I could give up about myself as long as I got something in return. But I don't think people should go into relationships and say to themselves, okay, what do I have to change? I'm not saying you shouldn't, you know, try to work with someone or cooperate or solve problems. That's not my point. I'm talking about who you are. So, you know, I've been thinking about the normality thing, and it's like most of the women who I would be interested in aesthetically would not be interested in me. Most of the women out there I would be interested in intellectually would not be interested in me. That's just reality. I don't buy into the zeitgeist of Seattle. I don't think the next, you know, fucking chip that they can insert in my anus is going to make my life better. I don't believe that all this fucking staring at your smartphone is making you smarter. I actually think it might be making you dumber. So the whole way of looking at the world in Seattle, other than drinking coffee and being smug, which I suppose I got that, you know, taken care of. But other than drinking coffee and being smug, the whole way of looking at the world in Seattle is something that I don't even buy into. So I don't know. This whole dating thing, I have been going around in circles on this. You know, and here's the other thing too, is I am an anarchist and I believe in free enterprise. So if you ask me, well, how do you feel about prostitutes? Well, I'll tell you. A, they exist in the Bible. B, the Bible is really ambiguous. Let's be honest about this. Okay, all you Christians out there, you need to read your Bible once or twice through. The Bible is extraordinarily ambiguous on the subject of prostitution. On the one hand, I think that Christ would say, I would prefer men and women to be married. And of course, there is the admonition against adultery. But on the other hand, prostitutes show up everywhere in the Bible. I mean, I think wasn't Samson married to a prostitute? And I'm not saying that it turns out well. Like, I think in Samson's case, you know, it didn't really, or maybe that was somebody else. But the point is, I'm still learning the Bible, so if I get some quotations or references wrong, you must forgive me, or at least I would hope you would. But yeah, I think prostitutes, from what I've been reading so far, show up just about everywhere. And sometimes they do things to help. So it's not as simple as prostitutes are evil. But here's the point. Do I want to engage in prostitution at this point in my life as some squeezy old 50-year-old man being all greasy and gross? No. Because I think that women and men and people that are in that world, they're in a really tough spot these days. It really is a world of exploitation. Because it's in the black market, and believe me, black markets and tyrannies go together hand in hand. Because it's in the black market, a lot of really terrible shit happens. So I can't really do that. And even if it wasn't, even if it was quote unquote, people could do it and they weren't being harassed by the cops, because I don't like saying the word legal. It's like, you know, even if it were legal, here's the thing. Supposedly marijuana is legal and they still can't use the fucking banking system. So you tell me how fucking legal that is. Okay, I'm sorry for that little segue, but yeah, even if prostitution were legal the way that marijuana is legal, I still don't know if I would do it because it's again, I think we live in really exploitive times. And as much as I would love to have sex with a woman, I just couldn't go there. So yeah, this whole thing has kind of got me messed up sometimes. I think about it and I say to myself, it's okay. You know, not everybody ends up getting married and having kids, and not every marriage succeeds. It's okay. Not everyone's going to have a whole bunch of romantic relationships. That is also okay. I think there's plenty of evidence, especially if you're a person of faith, but there's plenty of examples throughout history, not including the Bible, of people simply being more loner than anything else. And I'm not saying I want that, but I gotta tell you, at this point in human history, I can't find anybody that I would be interested in that would be interested in me. It's just so fucking unlikely. And in some ways, my first love was a lot like that. It was one of those rare situations where a few quirks kind of came together. But that shit is so fucking rare and so fucking unstable. You know, it doesn't really work. It doesn't really last. I don't know. I just don't know. Sometimes I go back, I go over this issue too much, but I think I've given up on it, and I think I'm gonna move on to the next topic, which is related in a way, and that's ring around your collar. So I don't know any of you guys out there, men or women, who are in my age cohort. But there were these silly commercials on TV back in the 70s, I think, about ring around your collar. And essentially, it was terrible. If you had ring around your collar, it means your shirt wasn't properly washed. It was some type of a sweat stain. It looked really gross in the commercial, like maybe somebody had an untreated boil that popped and left a nasty yellow smear of MRSA on the inside of the collar. But whatever ring around your collar was, people were fucking horrified by it. I mean, come on, you can't have ring around your collar. Ring around your collar. You see, this is the shit I'm talking about. There are people in the world who if they heard that, especially back in the 70s, they would become concerned. Like, this is now a thing. Ring around your collar is now a fucking thing. But really, there are many other people who would say, you know, that doesn't even remotely qualify as a concern. In fact, maybe the deeper concern is, what kind of fucking chemicals am I going to fucking buy to remove the ring around your collar? And what will those chemicals do to the water table? What will they do to the groundwater, to the streams, to the rivers? What will those chemicals that I'm going to use to take care of ring around my collar, what will they do to the oceans and to the fish? And I know you're going to say, Dan, are you getting all hippie on me? This isn't hippie, folks. Okay? The water, the air, the soil, these are things we share. I know you may not want to believe it, but it's true. It doesn't mean we need to be all communist about it, because that's its own kind of special bullshit. But it does mean we should at least have some understanding that part of our role as human beings is to be stewards. It isn't just to go someplace and turn it into a giant garbage heap. If that's how you think humanity should behave, you're a motherfucker. You're not a capitalist. You're not an entrepreneur. You're not all John Galt. You're just a piece of shit. Okay? We're actually supposed to take this beautiful gift of life and this beautiful planet and do beautiful things with it, not ugly things. Okay? That's kind of my fucking point. But anyways, ring around your collar. That was a concern. Not the fucking toxins, not the chemicals. The concern was the ring around your collar. And I think I beat that like a dead horse. Next topic is one of my faves. So anywho, amongst the intellectual elite of the United States of America and the entire civilized world, quote unquote, amongst those folks, it's considered meaningful to have a PhD, a doctorate. Because if you have a doctorate, you can have an opinion. If you don't have a doctorate, you don't get an opinion. Listen, our society is very, very Prussian at this point. You know, very Otto von Bismarck, very much about authoritarian structures. And one of the critical authoritarian structures of our society is the kind of academic pyramid scheme. And part of that academic pyramid scheme are these PhDs. Now, here's the thing. You could say, Dan, it sounds like you're about to give a little sour grape speech, and I'm not going to. I have a couple crappy degrees. I have a master's degree. Big fucking deal. I can tell you I have student loan debt. And I'm probably technically in default. I also don't give a fuck. In fact, as far as all the creditors go, all the people that have loaned me money, at this point in human history, it's your own fucking fault. Okay? I really don't care about the Toyota Camry that started falling apart that I paid $14,000 on and you repossessed. You can keep the fucking debt Toyota fucking Camry. You can keep all the fucking Glimbus. I don't fuck you. As far as the credit card goes, you guys are victimizers. So if really, in some small way, I get a chance to victimize you, fuck you, go fuck yourself. And as far as the student loan debt goes, listen, bub, I think that we have so bankrupted our society, and that includes our academic system, that I'm not even sure what I got was worth anything. You know how they say it's not worth the paper it's printed on? That's how I feel about my college degrees at this point. I'm not saying they weren't a great excuse to read books and think. And listen, you know, reading books and thinking can be a great way to expand one's mind. But beyond that, did I really get anything out of it? Or better question, did I get, you know, the most I could have gotten for the amount it costed me, for as expensive as it was, for its cost? Did I get my money's worth for my college degrees? Now, some of you would say, well, Dan, you get to have fancy programming jobs. And my response would be, bub, technically, one of my degrees is related to that. And technically, yeah, it does make me money. But bub, You know, there could have been a much easier way for me to get from A to Z, and it didn't have to involve getting a fucking college degree. It would just involve, having rational methods, in organizations for mentoring and putting people through internships and whatnot, and not being all fucking exploitive and fucking Prussian about shit. Anyways, we live in that situation. So if you don't have a PhD, if you don't say Dr. Sullivan, nobody wants to hear what you have to say. And on one level, I can understand this. I mean, people are so fucking busy, so fucking stressed out, being so fucking manipulated all the fucking time that I totally kind of get it. You know, if someone came to me and said, Dan, I'd like you to buy my special new pill that's made out of all kinds of stuff, and it'll give you, extra energy and you'll do better in bed, and it'd be like, listen, dude, no. I mean, and also, what's your background? Are you a doctor of pillology? Because listen, I want to know. Listen, I get the desire to seek the PhD when one is seeking answers to questions, but I'm going to let you in a little secret. There's as good a chance as not that the person with a PhD doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about. In fact, there are a lot of people out there with PhDs from really important schools that in all likelihood have those PhDs because they simply knew which boxes to check. Because it is also a fucking game. If someone wants to tell you that getting a PhD is not a game, they're full of shit. Now, you could argue that getting a PhD from someplace prestigious is not a game. But yeah, that's the top of the pyramid. Most of the pyramid is made up of schlimbus and glomp and a lot of crap. And getting PhDs from that part of the pyramid is not so fucking hard. So I don't know, but it does cost money, and that's the thing. It is a money-making scheme. People that get PhDs or law degrees or become fucking doctors, so they end up going to medical school, they get into massive, massive student loan debt, unless they're rich, unless it's all scholarship money, unless there's some selective subpopulation of the intersectional gender wars, they go into massive amounts of debt. That's reality for a lot of people. And then they find themselves with their PhD in up the buttology, and they're not really making a lot of money, and they wonder, why the fuck did I just do that? I don't know. I also just think you need to be careful. If you're going to listen to somebody because they have a PhD, be careful. Lots of people with doctorates are liars. Lots of people who are doctors, who have medical degrees, are liars. So just, and lawyers are liars by profession. So just because someone has a degree, just don't assume that they have the authority to speak. I guess that's what I'm asking. And next topic. Next topic is Game of Thrones. And even though technically I haven't finished the last season yet, because I just couldn't do it. I had to back up. I had to figure out if I'd missed something. So I backed up a couple episodes. I am more or less done with the season. I haven't seen the last episode, and it's been rather disappointing. But I gotta say, it's kind of funny. The show Game of Thrones began about the time my atheism, my life as an atheist came to an end. It's kind of funny. It was roughly the same time period. Not exactly the same, but it overlaps pretty close in terms of when one began and the other began. And so I kind of like have been watching Game of Thrones from a Christian perspective, especially the last few seasons. And here's the thing I'll say about Game of Thrones. If you're an amoral, atheistic, or some type of paganistic, like, fucking heathen type, then probably Game of Thrones is your favorite fucking show. Because it's really a lot of murder and rape and incest and war and lying and cheating and stealing. It's all of the commandments being broken almost all the time by pretty much almost every fucking character. Even the nicest characters, quote unquote, the nice ones, the Starks, they are also kind of duplicitous. And maybe that's kind of, and that's the other thing that bothers me about the show. And that's why I don't want to finish it, because I feel like if I finish it, I'm going to get the real message, which is going to piss me off. But the other thing about the show is it basically sells a kind of will to power message. You know, if the Starks as a family are the nice ones, quote unquote, then they really have suffered a lot of tragedy. Okay, they've had a lot of fucking tragedy, a lot of murders, a lot of killings of people in their family. And one of the messages of the show is kind of like, you know, the good guys, unless the good guys are willing to become the bad guys, the good guys lose. And yeah, maybe, perhaps. The other kind of fucked up thing is this Daenerys Targaryen character who ostensibly is freeing the slaves, but more or less just for a power scheme. So on one level you say, oh, isn't she kind of an anarchist, Dan, or a libertarian? No, she's just a dictator who wants all the slaves. That's the thing. When someone comes to free the slaves, typically it's so that they can own the slaves. When the North came to free the slaves, they wanted to own all the South, okay? Not just the slaves, but to make everybody slaves. That's the thing. People don't realize what actually is fucking going on, okay? A lot of these quote-unquote people that come to break chains, they really just want to just hand you a new set of fucking chains. So the show itself has a lot of really confusing messages. And if you're like me, if you're a Christian and also a person who believes that a free society is the only good society, the only successful society, then watching the Game of Thrones kind of makes you vomit sometimes because it's just like, what the fuck? The whole thing is about power schemes and crocodiles. In fact, it really is crocodile porn. And you know, if you know from listening to me, when I say crocodile, you can substitute the word government if you want to. But really, the Game of Thrones is crocodile porn. It really is. It's like, holy fuck. One crocodile trying to eat another crocodile. It really is that. You know, and it's really no more sophisticated. So no, I have not seen the last episode yet, but I cannot imagine that it's going to undo several years of rape and incest and murder and revenge and war and torture and just lots of child killing and lots of just satanic messages. It's really not going to undo that, probably. But I'm sure I'll enjoy it. Next topic. Oh, so this really messed up quote occurred to me today. Really kind of messed up quote came to mind. I guess you'd say a quote came to mind. Fucking pen. A really messed up quote came to mind. And it was something like, when you must succeed, you cannot lose. That's the thing. It sounds kind of heroic on one level, or at least bleakly fatalistic with an edge of courage. When you must succeed, when you must succeed, when you must succeed, you cannot fail. You know, when you must succeed, you cannot fail. And it occurred to me, that quote kind of occurred to me when I was watching the episode of the Game of Thrones, the Long Night or whatever, the episode where they're fighting the Night King and the frozen armies of the dead and the giant ice dragon. It occurred to me that there are scenarios that people get themselves into where they either succeed or they don't, but they must succeed. Because if they fail, they die. It's just it. It's fatalistic. It's like when you must succeed, you cannot fail. But the problem with that mentality is it's very much zero tolerance. It's very fragile. And when you apply it to situations where you're not surrounded by the army of the dead, I think you run into problems. I think it ends up becoming a suicide scheme. You know, a lot of situations at work that I find myself surrounded by, and it's one of the things that stresses me the fuck out, are all these silly fucking things that are really not that important, but are turned into, if we don't do this, we fail scenarios. And it's like, listen, you need to prioritize your shit. Not everything is equally important. And some of these things you do, and I say this kind of in the royal you to that giant thing I call Willy Wonka's On the Spectrum and Slightly Sociopathic Software Factory. Some of the things you do, Willy Wonka, are kind of stupid, and you waste a lot of energy on them. And really, the only explanation I have is that you don't live in the real world yet. That's the thing about these you have to succeed schemes. You cannot fail schemes. And I will tell you, Mr. Market loves these things. And when I say Mr. Market, I don't mean the free market. I mean the make-believe stock market bullshit that's part of the crony bullshit that has nothing to do with freedom. But Mr. Hedge Fund and Mr. 401k and Mr. Big Wheel Investor loves these schemes because they feed his or her bottom line. They feed the constant growth paradigm of the stock market. Oh, how you guys doing on costs? How you guys doing on revenue? And if it's a constant month-on-month thing, then hopefully you have some way of, you know, scheming away to convince the market that you're doing really well and your stock goes up and everyone's fucking happy. It's all non-GAAP accounting now, right? Mark to market. All of it's bullshit. When you must succeed, you cannot fail. I will tell you something. In the real world, when you have that philosophy, lying becomes very typical. Because if people are in situations where they cannot fail, they will lie. I don't know. I think I've mentioned this already, but I've been watching this Chernobyl docuseries from HBO. I accidentally clicked on the membership on Amazon Prime. Not accidentally. It's how I'm fucking watching Game of Thrones. Fuck you. Anyways, I've been watching this Chernobyl docuseries. And it's another good example of the zero fault mentality, the zero failure mentality, you know, the situation where you have to succeed at everything. You cannot fail at anything. The manager of that fucking plant could not conceive that the reactor was in a catastrophic failure state. He sent out his underlings to go and look down into it and fucking shit like that. And these fucking Soviet people, being good Soviets, good little communists, they obeyed and they went out and they looked down into a fucking open reactor. If you must succeed, when you must succeed, you cannot fail. What I would tell you guys is that you should strive for success. You should try to be the best person you are, and you will fail. If you live in this world, you're going to fail. At some point, you will fail. Even if it's on the last day of your life, when your body fails you, you will fail. If you live in the world, you will make mistakes. You're going to make mistakes. You're probably going to make a whole bunch of fucking mistakes. I've made a bunch of mistakes. But if you turn it into a zero failure scheme, you're going to live a hellish existence. It'll be constantly you saying to yourself, oh, I'm such a loser because I'm not perfect. Well, welcome to the fucking human race. You're not perfect. Congratulations. I mean, you don't really get a prize, but maybe you get a French bulldog. Anyways. Oh, I beat that one to death. Another show from HBO that I've been watching until my membership, because I canceled my membership, but so next month these HBO shows will be gone. But another show I ended up tuning into because of all the hoopla was this documentary series about Michael Jackson called Leaving Neverland. And I have to say, it was horrifyingly disgusting. I had to stop it the first episode because it said episode one, so purportedly there are more of these either in the works or done. But the first episode, I got to about an hour into it, and I just said, this is horrifying. This is fucking horrifying. And I was listening to these young men talk about their experiences, and I thought to myself, holy fuck. But at the same time, and I had this horrifying thought, this really feels like a process, another example, and I don't know how to put this, but I'm just going to say it. The way that the very tone of the documentary, the tone of the documentary, the tone of the discussion, especially the mother talking about Michael Jackson. Hold on a second. Yeah, I gotta check on my freaking. I gotta check on my laundry. I need to go check on my laundry. Hold on a second. I'm gonna put this thing on pause. I'm washing clothes. I have about a month's worth of clothes that were getting covered in all kinds of Horavian mildew and the different types of fungi from the Zorndis realm, and all the nastiness that is the Little Saigon Report. And so I need to wash clothes, and I had to take a break there to switch out a tranche, to put some clothes from the washer in the dryer, and then to start folding the dried clothes, and to realize that's what I'm gonna do every once in a while, like cutting your hair until the day I die. Anyways, leaving Neverland. I don't know what to tell you. I had to stop it an hour in. It kind of irked me in a bad way. I had this nasty feeling that I was being suckered. Because that's the thing about a lot of these documentary series on HBO and Netflix and Showtime, if Showtime still exists. And all these other networks is that they really are about propaganda. You really can't treat any of this as authentic art or journalism or anything at this point. You kind of have to see everything through the lens of propaganda. And the propaganda message of the show is basically, yeah, Michael Jackson was kind of terrible, but he seemed so nice and he had some problem. And the young men that were victimized, yeah, it's tragic, but the way that they are depicted and the language they use, it's like they're talking about an alcoholic dad. Let me put it that way. They're talking about a psychologically abusive and maybe even physically abusive alcoholic dad, and it's like, holy fuck, this is a monster. This is a piece of shit. I know he was the king of pop, and that's really fucking great. But this is a guy that molested children. That's what he did. And so it's one of those things where you say to yourself, what are they really trying to get? Where are they trying to lead us? Because this is how a lot of this ship starts, okay, folks? And I know you'll say, Dan, they'll never normalize pedophilia. Dude, people were saying that shit to me 20, 30 years ago about shit that's been normalized today. So don't tell me that fucking bullshit. It starts with a documentary or a documentary series where, there's a villain, but the villain is kind of a broken person, and we should try to fucking understand maybe, or I don't know. It just, listen, it's not like Michael Jackson comes out looking good in this particular docuseries. He does not. But there is that tone, that tone that makes me feel like we're getting so close to the acceptance phase of pedophilia, of child abuse, of child abusing, of sexual child abuse, that we're getting to the point in the United States of America where we may be near to normalizing that, or at least accepting it, where we say, no, you can't do it, but we accept you for who you are. That's a load of fucking bullshit. That's demon. That's, if you want to know who's behind campaigns like that, that's the devil. And I know you're going to say, but Dan, that's such a religious, kind of irrational, not very logical thing to say. And I will tell you, fine. You give it whatever label you want to. But it's evil, okay? By any other name, it smells like shit. And it is a pile of shit. Anyways, I could barely finish watching it. I will tell you that my ability to deal with some of these documentary series that are being produced now, it's a mixed thing. A few of them I can kind of process, and it's like I say, okay, this one's not so bad. Like the documentary on that fire fucking bullshit, the docu-series on fire, FYRE, that, I don't know, millennial Z generation party hub thingy that was going to happen but never did. I thought that was pretty good. And frankly, it had a good message about dealing with con men and con women and grifters. And how to deal with grifters. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was kind of funny. I think it's funny when people, get suckered on that scale. It's sad, but it's also kind of funny. So it's not like all of these docu-series are terrible. It's just that every once in a while they'll slip one in, and it's like, nah, this is propaganda. It's like that White Helmet bullshit that Netflix had going. The White Helmets are bullshit. They're CIA. They're Israel. They're fucking deep state. The White Helmets are bullshit, okay? This fucking situation in Syria that we have antagonized, that we've created, that we have made worse, that's bullshit too. We need to stop that shit. But yeah, the White Helmet shit. I even had a fucking relative of mine ask me about the White Helmets, and it was like, holy fuck. Why don't you ask me about any other made-up CIA bullshit? So I don't know. Leaving Neverland, I don't know if I'll be able to finish it. Like, I think I'll turn it back on and they'll be talking about this fuck, and I'll say to myself, how can they talk about him in this way? It's so gingerly. It's so polite in so many ways. When you consider what kind of a fucker. And the thing is, here's the other thing too that really pisses me off so far. Abusers like this guy, like Michael Jackson. They just didn't abuse two people. Okay, the idea that he just sexually abused two kids is bullshit. And that's another thing they're trying to sell, that somehow he was a private man who only let a few kids in. Let me tell you something. These fucking predators, they are predators. They predate. Okay? It wasn't just two fucking kids. Okay, chances are this is a fucking tip of the iceberg scenario. I can't believe people don't fucking realize that. I mean, the guy was so fucking crazy, he took surgical anesthetics to go to sleep at night. Surgical anesthetics, the kind of anesthetics that basically stops all your cells from working and shit. That kind of fucking hardcore anesthetics. He took surgical anesthetics to sleep at night. So no, I don't know if I'll finish this docu-series, but I do know I'm at 43 minutes for this podcast. I'm trying to keep them compartmentalized. I think I might have space for one more topic of angst, and I'm going to go into it. Next, cross it off my list and go into it, because fuck, why not? So, I think I've said in the past that I consider myself cosmologically agnostic. And let me explain what that means again. Unless I have certainty about the nature of the universe, I remain open-minded. I think that, science, for example, should be an open-minded process. People should accept certain theories as long as they are demonstrated to be true, but they should be willing to drop theories once they're demonstrated to be false, or at least there's enough evidence to show they are false. That's how I think science should function. It should function on a peer review basis. It should be about proving things mathematically and logically and through experiment. It shouldn't be about people's feelings or opinions about the world. That's not, science. That's other types of bullshit. Okay? So when I discuss things like the universe, I am open-minded. And I'm gonna throw an idea out there. I actually, on my website, I have a poster that essentially, asks the same question. And in 2019, if we're to believe the bullshit NASA tells us, in 2019, this is a fair fucking question. If we're to believe that NASA can put robots on Mars that can show us the nicest and highest resolution pictures of all kinds of Martian bullshit, If we're to believe they can do that, then I have one simple question. Where are the live, that means live 24/7 panning cameras, which means they can move around on the moon? There should be lots of cameras on the moon. There should be little robots with cameras on the moon. And guess what? People would pay for this shit. Everyone would pay. You could have a live channel of just a fucking big camera pointed at the Earth, showing us what the Earth looks like from the moon. And before you come back with, well, Dan, that's not possible, then how the fuck do I see the moon with so much fucking clarity from the Earth through all the atmosphere? Take your lies and your bullshit and flush it down the toilet. The vacuum is by definition clearer than atmosphere. So actually, having a camera on the moon and taking clear pictures of the Earth is way more feasible and easy than shooting a camera through thick fucking atmosphere at the moon. So yeah, putting a camera on the moon and looking at the Earth should be a doable thing. If I'm to believe all of the NASA bullshit, we should have tiny little robots and fucking drones. It's only about a 3-second cycle time, so you can actually do something that would be remote controlled. It's totally feasible. Yeah, you basically send simple commands for navigation. But the point is, it's nearly live. So why don't we have these cameras? Now, I know you'll say, well, Dan, why does it matter? It matters because I feel like if someone's going to say something is true, it's incumbent upon them to prove it and not to be worried about it being disproven, which means not only should you be able to show that it's true, but you shouldn't get all fucking nervous if people question it. The thing that bothers me about the whole we went to the moon paradigm, and I don't give a fuck what you believe about the nature of the Earth, if it's a sphere, if it's an oblate spheroid like that, you know, fucking Tyson guy says, oblate spheroids pear-shaped. I don't give a fuck. You could think it's flat. You could think it's a cube. I really don't give a fuck. If you can prove it to me, if you can demonstrate it to me, whatever. But I don't give a shit what you think. But here's the thing. If you really believe you're right, don't get all fucking nervous if somebody questions it. Accept it. In fact, be curious. If you are in a strong position intellectually, then a position of strength intellectually is curiosity. Holy fuck, you just had a breakthrough. So I have a simple question, and I would like you to meditate upon this, because really, if you dig into this, you're going to realize a whole bunch of lies start to unravel. Why are there no live cameras on the moon? Why? Why don't we have them? Why don't we have a live camera view of the Earth from the moon? We can do it from the Earth. We can look at the moon when it's up there. Why can't we do it from the moon to the Earth? Simple question. Where are the cameras? We have the technology. We have micro technology. We can build tiny little cameras and tiny robots. So we can totally launch hundreds of these things to the moon. Where are they? Now, of course, one answer might be, Dan, there's a secret conspiracy of aliens. Okay. Prove it. Another answer might be, well, damn, the moon doesn't exist and the Earth is flat. Okay, prove it. Another answer might be, well, Dan, you know, we just can't do it technically. It's not possible. Prove it. Prove these things. Just don't spout them out. I'm not saying I know the nature of the world, but please don't tell me you know for certain what the world looks like if you can't prove it. And I'll leave you with this thought with respect to the cameras on the moon. I'm proposing this, or I'm asking this question, because as a cosmological agnostic, I know that God could make the world in any way that God would want to. If God wanted the Earth to be an oblate spheroid, I'm going to let you on a little secret. God could make it an oblate spheroid. He could make it a sphere. He could make it a flat Earth. He could make it any fucking shape he wanted to. But I ask, and I leave you with this question, where the fuck are the live cameras on the moon?